And welcome back to Fully Equipped, Golf.com's golf-focused podcast, where we take recent PGA Tour news and put it through the lens of the everyday player of all skill levels. This is Tim Breon from True Spec Golf, joined by Jonathan Wall from Golf.com. Jonathan, what's going on this week, buddy?
Professor Breon, another busy week for both of us, I'm sure. I hear you've been on the road pretty much the entire time.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a grind, a little red eye coming back to South Florida today. I'll be speaking at a PGA conference on fitting and teaching tomorrow. I'm going to share some thoughts on putter fitting with the group. Earlier in the week was with Team TaylorMade out in San Diego. Actually was there yesterday. Got to spend some time with Todd Beach, their CTO of R&D, and also take a look at some of the new product lines that are coming out in the spring. A lot of really cool things there. Unfortunately, I can't really get too much into too much detail with any of that stuff, but I know a lot of golfers will be very happy with some of the new designs and some of the new products that are coming out of Team TaylorMade. So it's been a fun week, and looking forward to next week. We're going to get together and do a couple cool things as well. Where are you at today, Jonathan?
You got to love those product embargoes, Tim.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And what I really love are the leaks. You know, that's they keep all this stuff ironclad, and then all of a sudden, you know, leading into product launch, it seems like there's always a leak.
Without fail, it always happens. I'm in Dallas this week, spending pretty much my last week at home. I took a look at my schedule, and starting on the 27th of October, which is when you and I are going to be heading to Korea, I think I'm going to be home for 5 days between the end of the 27th and then the 27th of November. So a whole lot of time will be spent.
5 days, I'm jealous.
Yeah, I know, man. That's a lot for you. I know you're pretty much on the road the entire time, but yeah, it's going to be ramping up, and not only with just club with launches for product, but also for club tests for us, and really excited to get over to Korea and get this process started.
For sure. So regarding today's episode, we've got a couple different things to discuss. We got a 3-wood change from Henrik Stenson. First time in 10 years we will be able to talk about that. I know that you've noticed that the MD5 Jaws wedge that was just launched a couple weeks back out on tour is being more widely adopted. We've also got some special insight from some work that you and I did together. I also wanted to get into the gear spotlight this week and highlight the Mizuno JPX Iron Line. Once again, I think that that's reflected in some of the work that we had done going through an iron fitting last week when you were in Scottsdale, and go into some mailbag questions, and then really fun interview, Roger Cleveland, kind of the OG of wedges in the industry. Really, really engaging person to speak to, and not very many people on the planet more knowledgeable about wedge design. So it should be a great episode.
Oh yeah. No, I'm pumped for this one.
So on the Henrik 3-wood front, what do you got for us on that?
Yeah. So, you know, I would argue, Tim, you know, and people might disagree, but Henrik Stenson's Callaway Diablo Octane 2 or 3-wood is, in my opinion, probably one of the most recognizable clubs out on tour. I'd probably put it, you know, a distant second behind Tiger Woods, Scotty Cameron, Newport 2. But, you know, I feel like that's a club that even if you're not a complete golf equipment nerd, you are probably somewhat aware that this is something that he's had in the bag for a really long time. You got to go all the way back to 2009 when he first started using it. And, you know, this is a 13-degree product that Henrik has. So it's on the stronger side in terms of 3-wood loft. And, you know, he bombs it. This is a club that he's routinely used as his quote-unquote driver off the tee. It's as long as some guys' drivers. And he used the same head from 2009 until February of 2017 when the face went. And so he went looking for a replacement version. And he never quite found one that was as good. You know, Henrik talked a little bit about this club, and he said, you know, the backup version that I had to the one that I used for almost a decade, that one was about 95% as good. And then the backup to the backup was 75% as good. So he just, again, he never found something that was exactly the same. And I, you know, I would argue that the reason that was the case is because the face on his three wood had to have been red hot after using it for basically a decade. And, you know, it's tough to replicate a club, especially when you're so used to playing a specific build. Even if you get it built to the same specs, I've heard tour players say that a club just doesn't feel the same. So he decided to, instead of looking for a replacement after this most recent version went again, he went to Callaway's Epic Flash Sub-Zero 3 wood. This is the lower spinning version of their fairway wood product. And, you know, this is a full transition for Henrik. You know, not only is he switching heads, you know, we got to pour one out for this Diablo Octane Tour because this is a club, again, that a lot of people know, and that Henrik had, he won an open championship with this club. But he also switched out the Graphelet Blue shaft and went to a Project X prototype that's supposed to be pretty close to the Graphelet Blue, but it's only 62 grams, Tim. So this is a big change for Henrik. I'm kind of curious to see how this goes long term. He's changed three woods before. I believe he tried out the Rogue product, if I'm not mistaken, and it only lasted a little while before it got the hook. But yeah, curious to see how this goes, because when it comes to it, three wood is such a personal golf club. Once you find something you like, a lot of guys won't change.
Especially on tour. You know, when we work with different elite players, that's the one club that if it's well fit and the player has an affinity for it, really, really likes using it, it's the hardest one to change out typically. And I think, you know, even Rory shared some story, you know, speaking to that, when you had a chance to speak with him about three woods, it's the one that stays in the bag usually the longest when the player really builds confidence with it. Obviously, with Henrik, you know, it stayed in much longer than even most. The other really cool thing that, as you mentioned, 60 gram three wood shaft, it's pretty rare out there. Most players are going to try to play a shaft that's a little bit heavier than their driver shaft. So if they're playing 60 in their driver, they'll try to play 70 in their three wood. For some of the guys that are up there in the 70 and 80 weight range in their driver, they may go even up to 100 gram shaft in their three wood. So to see a 60 gram shaft in a three wood is pretty darn rare. And the Graphelite Pro Blue, I mean, how long has the Graphelite Pro Blue been around? It was a great product. Shaft design has obviously evolved since that product was originally released. But, you know, in Henrik's case, he had built up so much trust. As you mentioned, that club face had to have been red hot. He hit that thing further than he hit his own driver, actually, for some time, further than some of the other guys hit their drivers. You know, I did notice earlier in the year, this year, and a little bit towards the end of last year, he started to use the driver more frequently off the tee. And I wasn't aware that he had caved in the face of his A club, or his gamer, his primary three wood. But that makes total sense now that I know that, because we did start to notice him using driver more frequently. And then, you know, more specifically, just over the last few months, I've noticed he's using driver a lot more frequently. And I think, as you've noted, the C head, or the backup to the backup, which he's now trying to use, he just wasn't seeing the same performance. So, you know, let's see what happens with this Epic Flash. You know, if he likes it and he gets the numbers that he wants to see out of it, maybe this one will stay in for another 9 years and last until he's out on the Champions Tour. Who knows, right? But, you know, three wood design has come a long ways. I will say that when you look at the Diablo design and then getting into Epic Flash, between Flash Face, between, you know, and I don't, the Epic Flash Fairway Wood series does not have AI Flash Face, but it does have Jailbreak. And it does have some movable weighting, and there's a lot of bells and whistles in that design that were not present in the Diablo design. You know, going back quite a few years, I remember TaylorMade introduced the RBZ family of fairway woods to the marketplace, and those were kind of game changers. You know, Exotics or Tour Edge, you know, had produced really hot three woods that were up to COR limit, you know, because that's what we were using back in those days for speed testing, was COR. They had produced three woods that were up to COR limit, whereas nobody else really was. And then TaylorMade came, you know, followed suit shortly thereafter and came up with RBZ. I was just, you know, conversations yesterday with Todd Beach, who leads product design at TaylorMade, you know, we spent a good 10 minutes talking about how revolutionary RBZ was. And, you know, it was an amazing product. And I know a lot of folks that when they get a three wood like that in their bag, they don't switch it. So I'll definitely want to see where this goes as far as if Epic Flash stays in the bag. But once he finds something he likes, it's probably not going to get out of the bag for a very long time.
What do you think? You know, I always, whenever I talk to tour players and I ask them what is the toughest club to get out of your bag once you found something you like, and they all, I mean, I would say 80% of them say fairway wood, whether it's three wood, five wood, or both. Why do you think that is, Tim, that players have such a difficulty finding something that comes close to a fairway wood product once they have something that's working for them?
So when you look at the overall aesthetic and the design package, as far as how what are the dimensions of the club head and how that fits the eye, that's one thing that they really start to get comfortable with. When you look at the CG properties of the golf club and where that CG is lining up, and then all the different aspects of bulge and roll on the face, these clubs, obviously the striking surface on a three wood is much smaller than on a driver. And the little tiny nuances from one piece to the next, and then especially when you start to marry it with a shaft, I think what ends up happening on a three wood is that, especially for very high, highly skilled players, very elite players, they can perceive some of the nuances difference from one piece to the next more so than the average golfer can. And what I think ends up happening there is when they build up that trust and confidence in a product, and they know that it's gonna perform a certain way. As you know, out on tour, that's probably the most important component for any of these players to adopt a new club, is they have to be 100% confident in it. Otherwise, it doesn't stay in the bag very long. And so that's one of the things I think is you know, and also three wood. You know, you're using it off the ground. It's got a small striking surface. Relatively speaking to all the other clubs that you're playing off the ground, it has the least amount of loft. So even for really good players, for the most part, the most challenging club to hit well and consistently is going to be a low-lofted fairway wood or a low-lofted long iron. And so when they find one that they really like and they trust, it's hard to replace it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the versatility, as you mentioned, of that club, it took me a very long time. I'd probably say 5 years to find something that I really liked in a three wood, because again, you're looking for something that you can hit off the tee, looking for something you can hit off the fairway. And if you can't do one or the other, I think for a golfer, it really messes with your mind, because if you can't hit all the shots in the bag with that club, then you don't have the confidence when you've got a, you know, let's say a 230 shot into the green and you don't have that club in your bag, you can't just pull three wood and know that you're going to hit it. That's tough. Even though you can hit it off the tee, if you don't have that versatility, it certainly makes it difficult to fully trust that club in the end.
For sure. So the other thing I think worth discussing this week out on tour, you mentioned to me that MD5 Jaws is really starting to be well-received out there. What's going on with MD5, Jonathan?
Yeah, you know, I think if you look at the wedge landscape as a whole on tour, you know, Vokey has the lion's share of usage, and rightfully so. You know, Bob Vokey has done an unbelievable job. And you know, I think this, you know, this is something that I actually talked to Bob about probably when I very first started at golf.com. He and I sat down for a podcast, and you know, Bob didn't start in the wedge business. He was doing metalwoods before he started doing wedges. And I think that just goes to show you how, you know, the rise of Bob Vokey in the wedge industry. You know, he put his blood, sweat, and tears into making the product that he had with Titleist the best out there. And, you know, but I really look at Callaway and what they've been able to do with their wedge product. And having Roger Cleveland, who's, you know, arguably one of the most recognizable designers in the equipment industry, backing your wedge design game, you know, that certainly helps. But MD5, in my opinion, I think may be their most complete wedge. And we're starting to see that out on the PGA Tour. The very first week that MD5 was out at the Safeway Open in Napa, they had 27 wedges in play that very first week. And that's the most they've ever had the first week of a tour launch. And I think one of the reasons why players are kind of moving or gravitating towards MD5, you know, is the spin. This is something that we've talked about before when we were kind of highlighting the new technology with MD5. It has a new jaws groove. Now, this is something that Callaway has done in the past with the X series, and that was about a decade ago. What this groove is going to do is it's going to give you more spin. This is very similar to what they came out with initially. It's a highly aggressive groove, and it's going to give you more spin, not only from the fairway, but also out of the rough. And this is where a lot of recreational golfers struggle with spin, is around the greens. You get in the rough, you have a 56 degree, and you hit that shot. The grooves try and grab the cover of the golf ball, but you know, they might not be as aggressive as this jaws groove. So, you know, the ball might hit, skip, and then run out. Well, what Roger was trying to do is to get a groove that when you hit these shots from the rough, it's going to add additional spin. Now, Callaway is saying that it's 500 RPMs of additional spin, which is a lot of spin. And so that should help you hit, get those drop and stop shots that a lot of golfers are looking for. And, you know, Tim, you and I, and you know, this again, kind of early days with testing, and you and I both agree, we probably would have done this testing if we were going to really dive deep into Jaws MD5, probably would have done it outdoors, but we did it indoors. But we saw a pretty significant uptick in spin when I was hitting some shots with MD5. And I think that just goes to show you that this groove is for real.
For sure. So last week, Jonathan made a trip out to Scottsdale. We were doing some video content together. And in between takes, we also ended up doing some content with some of the newer products that have hit the marketplace. Some of the stuff for 2020, we got to see a little sneak peek at some of these newer products. And obviously, MD5 is new to the marketplace. So I said, hey, Jonathan, why don't we hit a few of these MD5 wedges against your current gamers? And granted, it's an indoor test. And granted, it's not like you're going through hitting a bunker shot and flop shot and hitting out of the rough versus the fairway or different, you know, moisture conditions as well. But, you know, at a very basic level, let's see what we get as far as this test. And we had Jonathan hit his gamer, varied the different length shots, hit a couple of 40-yarders, 60-yarders, 80-yarders, approaching a full swing. And then let him get through the MD5 products and hit the, you know, the same exact types of shots. And it was very telling. I mean, we tried to our best to eliminate any of the outliers on any of the really poor strikes, which there weren't any. Jonathan, he did a great job last week being our crash test dummy. But the bottom line here is we ended up seeing 1,000 RPMs additional spin to the current gamer products that Jonathan's now playing.
1,000 RPMs of spin. I mean, this is wild. I mean, yeah. you say it that, and I don't think that's going to be the case from you know, player to player, Tim. But yeah, 1,000 RPMs of spin. That's not a number that I was expecting to see.
Yeah, so 1,000 RPMs of spin is pretty substantial. I mean, and like I said, we hit shots of varying length. You know, a lot of players are not going to use a wedge predominantly with a full swing. Most of their shots are going to be, you know, less than full swings. I definitely want to get this wedge into different surfaces and different moisture.
Oh, for sure.
Conditions. Cause I think that's where if we saw 1,000 RPMs of delta on spin rate in an indoor, you know, test, imagine what we're going to see when we get it out into different playing surfaces like rough, and especially when we get into like moisture, you know, a wet fairway. I think you're really going to start to see a huge delta there. The bottom line is this MD5 Jaws groove system is real. I'm sure that's music to Callaway's ears, considering the expense and all the trouble they're going to with all the different cutter heads that they blow through to make this groove system. I think that, you know, it's real. And for any player out there who really struggles to get the amount of check on their short game that they would like, you know, anybody that's trying to make the ball stop when they're hitting a low driving pitch shot and they just can't seem to get it done, this is definitely a product that I would consider testing and considering putting in the bag.
Yeah, you know, but again, for a guy that maybe needs more spin, it's a great option. But you know, it's certainly worth, even if you're a high spin guy, certainly worth testing it out. But you know, there is a thing as too much spin when it right. comes to a wedge. You don't want to suck it back off the green time after time. But yeah, I think for anybody that's struggling to get some RPMs, this is a very viable option.
Yeah, I remember testing a collegiate player once with insanely high club head speed. We're talking 135-140 miles per hour on their driver. And I remember doing wedge fitting. And it's very rare that I'm going to be looking at spin rates with a launch monitor on wedge fitting, you know, because so many other variables are the primary driver for criteria, you know, of what we're going to go with on wedges. But he did produce the highest spin rate I've ever seen. He produced when he was swinging his 56 with a full swing, it was 18,000 RPMs of spin. I thought my machine wasn't working properly.
Wow.
So probably not a product if you're one of those super, super high spin guys that you want to put in play. I remember Sergio putting some Callaway wedges in play a few years back at Augusta and his infamous meltdown on hole number 15. Spinning balls back off the green time and time again. So you're super high spin. Maybe this isn't a product for you, but most of the golfers I know, when it comes to their short game and their half wedge shots, are going to benefit from more spin. So definitely worth considering.
Yeah, you know, and one more thing, Tim, before we transition to gear spotlight that I want to point out is, you know, the spin, yes, that surprised me. You know, 1,000 RPMs of spin, I think that'll surprise anybody. But in my opinion, I think for me, the biggest shocker testing MD5 was the feel. You know, I use raw wedges and I use it for a lot of the same reasons that other golfers do. I really like the feel. I love the, you know, kind of the more of the patina look. And
it's a plated wedge. I mean, we're talking about a plated wedge.
It's a plated wedge, you know, and that there's a big difference there. You know, with a plated wedge, you're not going to get the same rust. And, you know, for a lot of golfers, if you don't like to have your clubs rust and you don't want, I mean, one of the other things with using a raw product is it's, you know, the grooves are going to wear out faster. So some golfers don't want that when they buy a new set of wedges, but the plated MD5 wedge for me was buttery soft. And I think this is what kind of threw me for a loop because, you know, I've always kind of had this preconceived notion with plated products I've tested in the past. You know, it feels fine, but it just feels a little bit too firm for me. And, you know, for a wedge, especially around the green with touch shots, feel is so vitally important to me. And I think it is for a lot of other golfers as well. So that's why I've kind of shied away from hitting a plated product. But this one, you know, I kept telling that to you. I think probably at least a couple of times when I hit him, I just couldn't believe how soft it felt coming off the face. So, you know, yes, the grooves are a huge part of MD5, but really impressed with the overall feel coming off the club face with this wedge.
For sure. So with that, I think it's time to get into gear spotlight for the week. This is where we take a piece of gear that's of mine and drill down on it and figure out the contextual relevance to all the different players out there that may benefit from it. For this week, we're highlighting the Mizuno JPX Iron Line. And the thing that I think that's worth getting into here is, you know, Mizuno they've had a reputation for so long as being kind of a traditionalist, more classic iron house. They're one of the best iron houses in the industry, meaning that their designs are kind of timeless. And a few years back, they started adding some tech into those irons and trying to figure out how to help players while still retaining the Mizuno characteristic feel and aesthetic. And the genesis of the JPX line a few years back, and now we're into the JPX 919 products. And Jonathan, if you can get into, you know, of all of the folks out on tour who do not have contracts, so folks that are not being paid to play product, the JPX 919 iron is the most widely used iron, if I'm not mistaken, and get into, you know, kind of how that iron was developed, and then we'll get to share with our listeners our findings from your iron fitting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why we're talking about JPX today, and I'm sure there are a couple of y'all out there that are listening that are wondering why we aren't talking about the MP line. MP20 was released most recently by Mizuno, but, you know, for the most part, MP, you know, they have added some tech over the years. We've seen them add tungsten to the head, especially the cavity back irons. But for the most part, MP has always been a better player iron. You know, it's for your elite ball strikers. It's for your you know, single-digit handicappers. And I think that's why you see so many good players have a set of MP irons in the bag for close to a decade. You know, these are tough clubs to get out of the bag, especially when you find a set that you really like. But, you know, how do you take the looks of MP and pack in that technology? And this is where the JPX line comes in. For years, it was all about tech. But recently, you know, Mizuno tried to take some of the aesthetics of the MP, that really clean look, clean lines, more compact head shape, and bring some of that into the JPX. And we started to see that with the JPX 900, a real emphasis on the overall look of these irons. And look, you're right. The JPX 900, starting with JPX 900, that was an iron that really took off on tour, and it was because of Brooks Koepka. You know, when Brooks's deal with Nike had run its course and Nike exited the equipment industry, Mizuno came to Brooks and said, here is the JPX 900 tour iron. We've designed this with you in mind. And I could probably count on one hand the number of times a manufacturer has come to a player and said, we're designing this club basically around you. I mean, Tiger's the first guy because he had an entire product line built around him. But Mizuno really made a push for Brooks to use this product. And I think that's kind of where it all started.
Yeah, and you're right. It is rare that somebody goes to just one single player. I know that one of the world-class players that we've had the privilege of working with for years with the manufacturer that he was on board with wanted to have some creative input into the product design, specifically on irons, and was looking forward to having that opportunity, but was never really given the opportunity. And then the brand signed another, you know, dominant player, and within a year or so, that player ended up having basically their own version of one of the clubs. And this wasn't Tiger, different conversation. But, you know, in this, it was very off-putting to that initial player that I was discussing there. It was like, wait a minute, you know, I was dying to give you some creative input into a set of irons. And now I feel like I'm chopped liver over here. So it is very rare that a player gets to have primary input into a design. And I think what's come out of that collaboration is a really fantastic franchise of irons with the 919 JPX series. They've got 919 Tour, which is darn close to a straight blade. Then you've got 919 Forged. You've got a 919
Hot Metal
Pro, and the regular Hot Metal as well. And so, you know, the Hot Metal has been an amazing design that we've seen working for higher handicap players, especially those higher heavy handicap players that need a lot of game improvement, but they don't want to look at it. They want something that still has at least some semblance of traditionalist in it, more of a classic design. And something to mention here is that Mizuno spends a lot of time and effort, more so than most of the other brands, on the harmonics of their golf club. Meaning, when the ball in the club during the collision, it's going to cause that top line, specifically the top line of the club, it's going to cause it to reverberate, and that the frequency that top line is flexing, it causes a different acoustic sound, and then that is largely what transmits feel through the shaft into your hands. So the frequency that the top line and the overall club is vibrating at impact is something that contributes largely to the component of feel. You kind of heard this over the last few years that sound is feel. The two are, you know, the two are very closely aligned together. And so what Mizuno does is they spend a lot of time drilling down on what the top line of their golf club does as far as the way it creates feel. If you flipped over the 919 Hot Metal, which is the more high-tech iron, and you looked underneath the cut of the top line, you'd see that it's actually, they actually have a cavity in the top line with a bunch of little baffles in it. So they've spent a lot of time and effort to make sure that the harmonic frequencies of the top line is more similar to that which you would get out of a regular forged muscle back blade. that's one of the reasons why you hit the product. And even for the larger head size that's designed for the higher handicap player, it still feels pretty darn good.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when we're talking feel, you know, it's personal from one player to the next. So that's perfect segue to get into what your experience was in the iron fitting that we went through last week.
Oh man, I'm still kind of smarting from the whole iron test. You know, after 2 days of, I mean, basically,
you thought you had it all figured out.
I really did. You're right. I thought I had it all figured out, Tim. And you know, after 2 days after doing just, I mean, basically nine to five, 9 to 6 video shoots, you and I were both spent. We had dinner planned that night, and you being the really nice guy that you are, decided let's hang around for a little bit. Let's actually try and do, you know, an iron fitting. And I know it probably wasn't as deep a dive as you and I would have liked to have done, but it did reveal some things that I think, you know, we always get questions about how should I go about testing product. And, you know, it's difficult to kind of give an entire rundown on how to test product without really kind of doing it for yourself. And look, I've tested plenty of golf clubs before. I've gone through fittings. But I think the great thing about working with somebody like Tim, who, again, you know, TruSpec is product agnostic, which means that they don't have an affiliation with any company out there. So when you go in there, you're going to get the honest answer from Tim and the guys who are going to be fitting you for a product. And that is really important, because you don't want somebody that has any sort of biases. So how did I start my iron fitting? You know, I did. Tim and I went over, we measured a 6 iron, my 6 iron, my gamer 6 iron, and, you know, went through all the specs on it. And then he opened up a drawer and I started looking at heads, and it's okay, what heads do you want to test? What looks good to you? So we picked, I think, Tim, it was probably 6 or 7 heads. Now, the next interesting step in this process is we didn't just slap a whole bunch of new heads onto a shaft and start hitting it. Tim told me, look, I want to see if your shaft is right for you. So we hit shots with my gamer 6 iron. And then after that, he kind of took a look at those numbers and then picked out a couple of products that he thought might be better. Now, this is the most surprising thing. I've played 130 gram iron shaft, steel iron shaft. I played it for at least a decade. And it's a product
now,
that I know.
Question for you here. Yeah. Why? What was that, the reason why?
Really? Okay. This is the important part. I played 130 gram product because I like a heavier weighted club in my hands. And it, for me, it really helps with that transition. In the past, I've always kind
or so
of.
So you thought.
So I thought. You're right. I've always associated, and this kind of goes throughout the bag, when it comes to a lighter weight product, I've always felt like it just messes with my transition. So from the top, I always feel like I really never get up to the top. I kind of just pull the club down and go. And the shots usually, it's usually a heavy hook. I mean, that's usually my really bad miss. So Tim pulls out a 115 gram product, and me being just, you know, in my head, I automatically think, well, this product is going to just screw up my transition. That's the first thing I think about before I have even hit a golf shot, which is not what you want to do, Tim. I know you're laughing. Yeah, so I know you're laughing about this because you know this is the absolute
great.
Worst
it was great
way to
see
do
the
it.
Look on your face. I love when I work with players and I get that look, you know, you're crazy. This is never going to work.
Yep.
It's a lot of fun to see that come out of some players. And then after 2 or 3 swings, they're utterly, you know, baffled as to why this is working. So there's a lot going on with what Jonathan just said there. But Cliff Notes version of the fitting process is you want to get a measurement of what the player is currently using. You want to both measure the golf club itself as well as the performance of it to establish a baseline. From there, the next thing that we're going to get into is testing families of shafts. By families of shafts, I don't mean specific shaft models or SKUs, so to speak, but just trying to figure out, okay, is the length right? Is the overall weight right? You know, should he be playing a heavyweight, midweight, or lightweight product? Is the material right? Should it be graphite or steel when it comes to irons and wedges? And is the flex, you know, in the right ballpark? We're just trying to get the right section in the stadium at this point. Once we've figured out the right shaft family, then we start to drill down on club heads. Now, it wasn't just about, you know, Jonathan's biases and preferences. any really good club fitter is going to guide the process. All of our fitters at TruSpec are trained to do as such. You know, obviously, when you're looking at a drawer of 30, 40 different products, it can be overwhelming. And unfortunately, a lot of players have a lot of biases that steer them away from products that would actually benefit them. So it's always best practice to get some player feedback and input into the selection of the products that you're going to try them with. But it's also very important for the fitter to have a really thorough, you know, product knowledge base to know, okay, this is what we saw out of the performance of the player's current set. This is what the current set is. So therefore, we kind of need to start looking at products that have these specific performance profiles. So there was a lot of that going on behind the scenes that I wasn't necessarily communicating directly to you, Jonathan, because I didn't want to bias you in any way either. So once we've got some heads that we're going to test, we're going to test all those heads using that one shaft that we identified in the shaft family test. When we drill down through the club heads, we're going to find one or two club heads of those five that are really exceptional performers. And I do want to state this, when you're talking about irons, I will say that the needle probably moves a little bit more when it comes to club heads than it does with shafts. Obviously, when you're going from shaft family, the needle moves tremendously. When you go from club head to club head, we see the needle move tremendously once again. And then once you've figured out the shaft family and the right head, then you're going to test all of the shafts within that family. So in your case, it was kind of a mid-weight, steel, extra stiff flex product. You know, interestingly enough, you're a tall fella, man. I mean, what are you, 6'3", 6'4"?
Almost 6'5".
6'5", sorry, I shortchanged you one. but bottom line is you play standard length, and I wasn't expecting that. Now, the reason for that, folks, is you would expect 6'5" standard length. What's going on here? Jonathan's posture as far as his setup position, he definitely is in an athletic position. I wouldn't say that you're crouched or bent over too much, but you've got enough knee bend and enough, you know, hip bend that it justifies that, you know. And plus, you also have long arms. So that's kind of the equalizer for taller folks who do have really long arms. They end up playing products that may not be as over length as you would think. So, you know, we tested a couple of products. I didn't even tell you this, but we tested a couple of products that were a little bit longer than standard. And
wow, really? The
performance wasn't very good. Remember those really fat hook shots that you kept hitting?
Yeah.
Those were with over-length products. So,
Thank you for not telling me, because I would have totally gotten in my head about that as well.
Yeah, see, that's why I'll always be transparent and completely clear with a player after the test process, but during the test process, a lot of times it's better, especially with folks that know about this stuff, a lot of times it's better to not really get into the details until after the fitting's over, because the player is going to usually almost always bias the outcome if you tell them too much information. So, so anyways, that's what we did with Jonathan last week. And the results, you know, the products that we ended up picking, it was a Oban CT115 iron shaft. Really cool product made by Oban. They collaborate with Shimada over in Japan. Super high-end shaft product that is extruded steel. We'll save the conversation on extruded steel for another day, because it's pretty complicated. But bottom line is that shaft is manufactured in a manner that really no other steel shaft is manufactured with. So very high-end product. Not surprised to see it win the day as far as the fitting. We do extremely well with that product at TruSpec. And then obviously the 919 Forge product, not the Tour. You know, Jonathan doesn't get as many reps as he used to. You know, I know that you used to be a plus one scratch when you were playing your best, but obviously life on the road and family and everything else, we need a little bit more perimeter weighting these days. So the 919 Forge product, and as far as the results, the difference of the before and the after, I mean, we got you a few yards of distance, but the striking difference was the consistency and the pattern, you know. Suffice to say, you're going to hit far more greens and your ugly shots will not nearly be as ugly with this combination compared to the gamer set that you were coming from. And one last thing to note, that gamer set that you came from, I mean, amazing set of irons, Oh, yeah. It was the same set of irons that I used to game prior to what I'm currently using now. And it's one of the highest selling products that we have at TrueSpec. Obviously, if everything we do is performance driven at TrueSpec, then anything that's one of our highest selling products is, you know, by correlation going to mean that it's a really great performing product. So, you know, it's not like you were coming out of clunkers. They were really, really great products that you had in the bag, but we were just able to make it that much better from a consistency and ball flight standpoint.
Yeah, no, and the great thing about that the JPX 919 Forge is it's from a profile standpoint, it might be a touch bigger than the my gamer set, but it still looks mm-hmm. really playable, and that again goes back to Mizuno in the way that they've been able to pack all this tech into these irons and still give it a really playable shape. You know, you don't feel like you're hitting a shovel. And that's one of the things where when people ask me how has iron changed or how has iron design changed over the years, I think for me, the most impressive thing is how they've been able to pack the tech into these smaller heads. You know, you don't have to go out and look for a larger profile in a game improvement club anymore. A lot of these clubs look like, if you were to go back, you know, 10 years, they look like a lot of the products that were for better players. So that's a great thing for somebody like myself, again, as you mentioned, who doesn't get out that often anymore and spends more time with the family. So I need a bit more forgiveness and I'm okay with that. And this club gave me all the distance that I could possibly need.
Yep. So last thing to mention, what you just said there is very important, that the technology that's now available in a smaller aesthetic package is really kind of where iron design has gone. You know, iron design kind of stagnated for quite a few years. You had the Ping I2s with a lot of perimeter weighting and offset. And then you had some, you know, we've discussed VAS and a few other iron designs, but there weren't any significant technological leaps forward for quite a while. And then designers started adding in some technological features, whether it was slot technology in, you know, inverted cone or variable face thickness. Some products started getting cup face. And you started seeing all these different technologies appear in irons over the last 10 years. And obviously distances have gone up tremendously. But one of the things is that all this technology, the only way you could put it in an iron was if you made the package really big, meaning the club head. And due to multi-material design specifically, being able to blend different, you know, manufacturing methods, going with multiple pieces to make one head, what that's resulted in is that it's given designers a lot more flexibility to add technology and do it with products that are a lot smaller and more traditional looking. So it's really exciting for players, you know, like you and me, where aesthetics and feel are very important. But, you know, as we mentioned, we're not as good as we used to be. So, and with that, that's perfect timing to get into our mailbag questions for the week. This is where we give our listeners a chance to reach out to us and ask them things that are on their mind. Why does nobody make raw finishes for the retail market yet? All the pros are using raw finishes. Volke used to, but they don't anymore, apparently. John, this is a great topic here because we do see such a huge percentage of usage out on tour by different tour players using raw finish. By raw finish, we mean that they don't have a chrome or brushed nickel, something that literally that thing comes off the die press and with very minimal finishing ends up, you know, they'll polish it, but they're not going to add a finish to it. You know, from your time out on tour, how often, you know, what percentage of tours or tour players are using raw finish on their wedges, would you say?
I would say a large majority are, and there are a number of reasons why. One, the raw finish is going to have a little bit of a duller look to it. So it's going to look better at address. You don't have to worry about the glare. When you don't go with a plated finish, sometimes it gives it a little bit of a softer feel.
Yep.
Some guys like how a raw wedge, over time, as it starts to oxidize,
yep,
as the air starts to catch that raw finish, it'll start to rust. And that little bit of rust will add a little bit of bite. So, you know, there are many reasons why guys like raw wedges. If you're a casual golfer, you see a raw wedge in a tour player's bag and you want to know if you can get one. And this is actually incorrect because you can get raw wedges. You know, we mentioned Vokey has the Wedgeworks program where you can custom order raw wedges. Cleveland has a raw version in the RTX 4. Mizuno has one in the T20 Raw. Right. So there are lots of raw options out there. They're just not as common as the plated versions. And the reason for that is just the plated versions are more durable. Sure. Not every recreational golfer wants to buy a new set of wedges every year. They don't want to have to deal with the raw finish rusting. So that's why having a durable plated finish can be a benefit to the everyday golfer.
That's right. And I think the biggest reason to use a raw wedge, we've all had a shot where we're hitting a ball into the sun and we swing a wedge and it's a chrome plated or nickel brushed satin finish. And that glare, that reflection off the sun, it'll give us that hot spot during the swing and we get temporarily blinded.
It's another reason to complain.
Yeah,
and
right.
Blame it on the golf club.
That's exactly right. But I think we've had that sort of shot happen to us. And obviously you're not going to get that out of a raw wedge. As you mentioned, they typically, depending upon what finishes are used, you got black PVD finishes out in wedges these days.
There are a lot of finishes.
You've got so many different finishes, oil can finishes.
The blue ion from Mizuno.
Blue ion from Mizuno. Yeah. So with some of these different finishes, you do get a little bit firmer feel at impact. The softest of all the different feels you're going to get, as you said, is a raw finish. And the other big thing is that nobody wants to buy a rusted golf club. So when you're buying when you buy a raw finish in a golf shop, like you notice on the new TaylorMade Mill Grind 2, they actually have a piece of filament over the face that they stick. And that way they make sure that the product doesn't rust while it's in the store. Nobody wants to buy a product while it's rusted, you know, sitting in the rack on the store. So I think that's a big reason also why manufacturers don't manufacture as many raw finishes.
Yeah, and I think bottom line, there are a lot of different options here. So if you want raw, if you want plated, you know, you can try different ones. Go ahead and test them.
That's right.
All right, and the next question in this week's mailbag.
Why doesn't Scotty Cameron retail the Futura X welded Flona putter that Justin Thomas is using? Now, I'll just say this. That's a really expensive process when it comes to welding that neck on there.
Yeah, so when you look at welding different neck styles onto the same head, something that a lot of folks may not be aware of, but the mass of one hosel to the next is going to be different. So you have to account for that in different club head designs. Even though the head may look identical, if you're going to weld a different hosel on there, a lot of times you need to have the weighting slightly different, differently distributed in that head to account for what you're welding on there with the hosel. So this isn't a one-size-fits-all approach where you can just put any hosel on any head. It does take a lot of different iterations to make sure that you get the CG properties right in the head when you add a different hosel. So it's a very expensive process. When you look at, you know, what a lot of club makers and designers, when they're looking at what sells at the point of sale, you know, a 60, 70 degree toe hang, flow neck hosel, like similar to what we've got in that Futura putter that JT uses, you know, that's not going to grab the lion's share of sales. So
exactly.
If it's going to be an expensive process to fabricate the putter and manufacture it, they better make sure they sell a lot of units to make up for that. And a lot of times what that means is that a certain model never gets released.
So if you need one, go ahead and get your tour card.
That's right. That's exactly right.
All right, and with that, let's get to part one of this week's interview with Callaway Wedge designer Roger F. Cleveland. You know, I won't mention what the F stands for again because this is a family show. But, you know, Roger is one of the most famous club designers, not just wedge designers, in the history of the industry. Before Roger came to Callaway, he created Cleveland Golf, which I'm sure you all know. And now he's been at Callaway for a good little while and has done some pretty great designs. You know, the Mac Daddy is one that everybody knows, but he's also done some work with Phil Mickelson on the PM grind. You know, we had a great chance to discuss the new Mac Daddy 5 and a lot of other designs that Roger's worked on in the past. We're looking forward to this interview. Well, we're excited to have one of the all-time greats when it comes to club design, particularly with wedges, on the pod today, all the way from Napa, California, where I'm sure he's already had a couple glasses of wine this week. Callaway Chief Wedge Designer, Roger F. Cleveland. I won't mention what the F stands for because this is a family show. Roger,
absolutely.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Fred.
Exactly, Fred.
Yeah.
All right, Roger. So when golfers see Callaway's new MD5 Jaws Wedge, they're getting a look at the final version of this product. What they don't see is the hours that go into the design. What's the process like when you're creating a wedge, specifically MD5, and how far in advance do you start working on a product like this?
It's been, you know, there's not the technology in the wedge. Well, there's a lot of different things that go into it, but I think it's, we start right after we introduce the MD4. I mean, we're constantly, you never put the pencil down. But you have to release it and stop the development, you know, to get it launched. So MD4 was launched. We were already working on different variations of how to improve the groove and create more spin and working with our suppliers and working with our engineers to be able to create a cutter that could do that for us. You know, our R&D department is the biggest in golf. It's the biggest spend in golf, and we devote a little time to the wedges. I mean, we're constantly working on higher speeds and drivers and so forth. But we one of the guys said there's a USGA test on face roughness. Okay, and so everybody lasered down, and so the MD4, the guy said, well, why don't we bring that amount of, you know, roughness, why don't we machine down and leave it up? So we actually machined down the face and leave up four edges between each groove, and with the groove it's 84 edges to catch the ball, so we have that going into the MD5. So the development of the groove itself, it's all about the edge radius and tightness of the edge to create spin. And so we've developed a very, very tight radius right up to the USGA limits. And so you add that to the micro grooves that I just mentioned, and it's an incredible amount of spin. And it's in the area where you need it most, in the 40 to 50 yard area where we see a little spike in spin of around 500 to 600 RPM in that area where you need it most, where you need to get the control the trajectory and find the pin. So it takes a while. We change the shape. We reduce the size of the transition wedges, which are the low loft, you know, 46, 48 pitching wedges, which is, we have a beautiful sole on it, but we made it a little smaller, you know, heel to toe to fit into your set better. And we've had some great response from that from the tour already. You're constantly evolving, you know. I mean, with sole designs, we added a new sole design. We're working right now with tour on another sole design, which we might introduce later on.
Interesting.
So we're constantly moving. We changed the shape a little bit. We actually increased or flattened out the top line and the leading edge just slightly. We actually modified every sole that we had in MD4. We made them all. What could we do to make it better? You know, we looked at, we widened the W, made it more like a sure out. We widened the C grind just slightly to make it more forgiving. The X, which is the high bounce, very narrow, we actually added a couple of degrees of bounce there. We really tightened them up, and we have now a low bounce W, which is really getting some nice feedback here. That is enjoying some success. So we have five grinds now, and that means a fitting. We have a fitting system, and I'll talk about that later on.
You know, you mentioned the Jaws grooves, and that's a name that I'm sure golfers that know wedges are familiar with. It came out with the X series a decade ago. It's a key piece of tech in this wedge. And I was talking to you recently, and you mentioned that it didn't really even come up to add the Jaws name until Chip Brewer, Callaway's president and CEO, brought it up. Can you get into the design of this groove? Because I know the wall angle in particular is very important. I mean, this is a groove that's unlike anything Callaway has ever created. And I know the process for getting this groove just right is incredibly difficult.
Well, there are a lot of specifications that you have to and must adhere to with the USGA and R&A because of that rule change that they did. And so to comply with that, we have to test, and we have a machine that's, you know, I think it's 100. I mean, it's well in over $150,000 to be able to test digitally the grooves. There's another test that we can do that's not digital and it's not as accurate, but we get to that length to test groups to make sure that we're in compliance with the rules. And so all the time we have to do that. So to get this edge as tight as we can up to that limit that they prescribe takes some doing. And this is the most spin that anybody can have on the planet right now.
And just as a follow up to that, Roger, I mean, how long does it take to machine these grooves onto the face? I know it takes a while, and I know you have to go through a whole bunch of cutters to get to make this process work.
It's not only cutters. I mean, the cutters have to stay sharp. I mean, you're machining. This is a soft, what they call it, a soft steel. Steel is steel, but this has, it's, if you know metallurgy, it's high on the B scale. I mean, there's a lot of elongation, which means that you can bend it and so forth. But it is steel, and it takes around 9 minutes to machine one wedge, and you take the face. Flatten the face. You machine the micros. Okay, so you machine down and leave four edges up between each groove. There's 13 grooves usually, and then you machine in the groove. So there's a lot of precision and a lot of opportunity to mess up. But you have to it takes time and a learning curve but these cutters have to be sharp, so we change out around 12 to 14 parts per cutter. So,
which is crazy,
and hopefully we can go and sharpen the cutters back up. Otherwise, that's a huge waste. But I think we can, and that's what we do. But that's how many cutters it takes. And if we have a program of hopefully a successful program of 300,000 to 400,000 of these things, you can imagine the cost. But we have to do that. I mean, we want to bring the folks the best tools that they possibly can in that short game area.
Roger, Tim Brion with TruSpec here. We've kind of already hit upon this on the first couple of questions, but I think there's a perception by the average amateur golfer out there. They see the technology in the driver. They see it now in irons. And I think that there may be a perception that there's not as much tech when it comes to wedge. And I'd be curious to hear from you and the proliferation of all the different technologies brought to bear with research and design over the last 20 years, how all of this technology has influenced wedge design and how wedge design has evolved.
I mean, we've evolved, I think, through interaction and great feedback from the tour and different techniques. And so one of the things I really address the wedges to is the wedge shot that puts the most demand on the wedge is when you get closer to the green. When you're hitting the ball first on a full wedge, you need to have proper turf interaction, but you're hitting the ball first, so you have considerable shaft lean when you're doing that. But when you're hitting a pitch shot from 40 yards in or even 50 sometimes in and closer and in the bunker, you have to have proper sole geometry or proper design for the technique. And the tour's technique has altered in the last 15 years that I have seen, for sure. And it's getting shallower. There's not as much set of your wrist, so you're actually can apply more speed when you do this technique and to the shot. So you can stay wider and you can release the head and put the sole on the ground actually before the ball and let it slide through the ball. And that's what the tour players do so nicely and so well. But you have, and that's what I go around in my clinics and so forth to teach. And that's what the teachers today profess out here, and that's where these guys get such control. When you take your big swing and you miniaturize it for that shot, you're going to be too steep. And so we have options for you. So we have to have options for the shallow attack angle and the steep attack angle, and that's what we do with the jaws. We have five grinds, some for the if you're steep, and that's fine, but you actually, when you're steep, you actually have to slow down to release the club down. You slow your body down, and so you need more help. So we have a wider sole or more bounce. So that's what I've really seen, and that's where we've directed the design for certainly the higher lofts, that 56, 58, and 60.
For all of our listeners out there, what Roger's referring to is using the bounce on those pitch shots and those short shots. I know, Roger, that you're a huge advocate, one of the largest champions of using the bounce. And so I'd be curious how this, you know, came to you as far as throughout your years designing wedges. Was that something that when you initially started designing wedges that you really emphasized, or through the, you know, observation of all the different tour players you've worked with, you started to realize, wait a minute, all the really good ones are using the bounce in the trailing edge of the club?
Well, early on, I've always had wedges, especially the high lofted wedges that had bounce. But, you know, my test center in my learning, my college or schooling is the tour. And these guys are really good. They practice this part of the game more than anybody, because when you go out and miss six greens and shoot 68, okay, you know what you're doing with the wedge. You're in the bunker, or you're short-sighted yourself. So I pay attention. Also out here are the best instructors in the world. And so I'm like a sponge. I want to, you know, the Peter Cowans, you know, the Chris O'Connells, all, you know, these guys out here are wonderful. And so I've learned. And so that's how you also look at, you look at competition. I mean, there's great competition in this area as well. And you learn from that as well. And you learn some mistakes that people have made from that. So you're constantly learning and applying that to the product. And that's what is incorporated. And that's why I'm so excited with this lineup of the Jaws, is that there's a wedge there for everybody. And I encourage the folks to, you know, this is the area of the game where the pros work at this almost as much as they do their long game, and sometimes more, because they need technique. Because every lie, you have to read the lie correctly, and you have to apply the correct shot for that lie, and that takes time, and that takes a lot of practice. And that's why I encourage the amateur to spend some more time, take a lesson from the pro, and learn, because it doesn't take strength to have a really good short game. It takes technique, and it takes a great wedge. So, like Josh.
Yeah, and I noticed that you have a new grind that's being released this year, that low bounce W grind. I have to imagine that all of that design came from work with different tour players.
Yes, we rolled it out. It's for somebody who has a shallow attack angle, and we have narrowed the heel. But what's happened in the past is I used to do a lot of grinding out there, of taking our wide sole, a W, and taking a little bounce off, but narrowing the heel, taking a little more heel relief. So when you open the face, you're adding bounce, you're adding loft, you're adding bounce. It's a relationship that's like one-to-one. And so you need to create relief in the heel so the leading edge stays low when you do this. So you got to get under that ball. So you want the leading edge to stay there under it. So so it incorporates all those. But the width is also there. We tighten the radius from front to back. So it's very forgiving, even on the tightest lies. And it's having some success.
Roger, I know it's still early, but what's the general consensus been so far when it comes to MD5 Jaws on tour? You know, what are guys seeing and telling you, especially this week while you're in Napa, about the design? I saw Henrik Stenson and Francesco Molinari recently added the wedge to the bag.
Well, one of the things, I mean, they love the shape. I mean, almost instantly, the guys like the shape. It's a tweak to the MD4, but it's I love the straighter top line. Yeah, I mean, it still has a radius. It's not angular at all. It flows. It flows beautifully, and so right off the bat, they're engaged. They love the pitching wedge. A lot of pitching wedges in sets you know, match the width of the sole of the set of the irons. And sometimes they're not as wide as you'd like for actual pitching the ball. So they're gravitating to that pretty fast. So I've seen that. The other thing that that is incredible is the feel in these. They're a little different. We've messed around with the CG location or the mass properties of this wedge a little bit, and we've created a marvelous feel. And I've heard that from almost every player. So it's a nice package. And we have, you know, out here a lot of the folks use raw wedges because of the non-glare. We are offering commercially a beautiful chrome, a soft milky chrome, as well as a tour gray, we call it, which is a PVD over chrome. And it's a chrome over PVD, excuse me. And it's a beautiful, deep gray, charcoal gray. That's wonderful. But we're you know, sometime next year, early next year, we'll offer the raw to the, when we catch up with our production, we'll offer the raw to the folks.
And many thanks to Roger Cleveland. Always a great interview, Roger F. Cleveland. And we look forward to part two of his interview next week. So for all you listeners out there, make sure that you tune in. Until then, have a great week. See you then.